versus Jones. Mr. Cornea.
Reed Cornea for Samuel Jones. May it please the court, counsel. This case was, the sentencing occurred before Rita, as well as the briefing in this case. But I want to start with just a quick rendition of the facts, since I don't have a lot of time here. Mr. Jones was walking down the street, and he was shot. Taken to the hospital, and subsequently, as he was being interviewed by Beloit police officers, they found an empty shell casing in his pocket and a live round in his pocket and a bag of marijuana. Subsequent to that, he was later charged in district court with a violation of 18 U.S.C. 922G, I believe sub 3. Now, the question here is, why is this sentence unreasonable? And I start with the fact that the guidelines are general in nature. And they incorporate a wide characteristics and behaviors of many people, and many less culpable people than others. And Mr. Jones is a perfect example of this less culpability. You know, here are the offenses, just a quick run, there's a little bit more, but 922G, it's an offense. You can be charged if you're a felon in possession of a firearm. You can be charged if you're a person who's been convicted of domestic violence and you have a firearm. If you've been institutionalized in a mental institution, you can be...
I don't know what you're driving at. What does that have to do with Jones?
Right. Well, Jones was sentenced under 922G because he had possessed drugs when he was shot and he had a couple of shell casings on him. Now, the question is it reasonable, or do the guidelines, and as we argue to sentencing, was this in the heartland of 922G? When is it reasonable for a person who's been convicted of a felony offense, who later possesses a loaded firearm, who may have a criminal history category 4, is it reasonable for that person, who obviously presents more of a risk to the community than Mr. Jones did, to get the same sentence that Mr. Jones had for having an empty shell casing?
Well, Mr. Jones, I mean, it sounds to me like your argument really is a disagreement with the underlying substantive law that regards possession of marijuana as possession of a unlawful drug, and that also says, you know, we don't want people with ammunition walking around. Some of them might, you know, be carrying around cocaine. Some of them might marijuana. The ammunition suggests that there's some extra risk. And there are legislative judgments underneath this that you or I may agree with or may disagree with, but nonetheless, that there are legislative judgments and we are bound by them. His sentence isn't, as sentences go, the longest one I've seen is 24 months, right?
So correct, Your Honor.
That's a relative, in keeping with the fact that maybe not that much is going on. It's a fairly
and he has all misdemeanor charges prior to this.
Right, but I'm concerned that where you seem to be going with this is, to me, doesn't seem to be a place where we can go, because the fact is the law does prohibit the behavior that he engaged in.
It does prohibit the behavior he engaged in, but then we look at, if you take that behavior and you can, and then you plug it into the guideline range, all of a sudden he's in the same position as an armed felon.
And that's why your quarrel is really with the guidelines and how they're calculated and how
exactly.
That's a big problem if that's the main argument you're making, because the court took into account his criminal history, the need for deterrence, his need to have some educational training and drug and mental health treatment. He saw he was a recidivist, so the court fashioned a sentence that would perhaps give him some help and not have him back caught up in the criminal justice system.
But it's still, the unreasonableness of it is the fact that...
Yeah, but we can't invalidate the guidelines, right? They're the promulgation of an agency under delegation by Congress. As long as they're constitutional, we're bound by them, right? You can vary a sentence on the basis that the guidelines doesn't fit this individual, but you can't just knock out the guidelines on the basis that they're foolish general, right?
But that gives us the segue into 3553A, because the guidelines...
So what's special about Mr. Jones? That's the question.
Well, he's an individual with misdemeanor convictions who had a small bag of marijuana.
All that is figured into his sentence. That's why it's 24 months rather than, you know, it could be 10 years or 20 years.
Well, I see my time is up.
Thank you, Mr. Cornea. Mr. Yarosh, again?
Thank you. Please, the court. Briefly, the Supreme Court in Rita took care of the main point in the defendant's brief. The question of whether or not the sentence was reasonable really relies upon the process by the district court. District court did not wasn't confused about the post-Booker process. It correctly calculated the guidelines and then took into account 3553A factors. Going through, quite frankly, for Judge Shabazin in this case to be praised in a rather meticulous detail, several factors, including, as what pointed out, the age, criminal history, and other things that could be taken into account. This simply wasn't a case where the court simply said, hey, here's what the guidelines are, here's what the sentence is, and let's get on with it. It was an evaluative process and correctly applied. There really was no error either in the guideline calculations or in the process employed by the court. The question is not whether another sentence be employed, as this court knows, but whether this sentence itself was reasonable. And under the circumstances and under the factors articulated by the district court, it was reasonable, it was within the guidelines, and it certainly was reasonable under the circumstances. Unless somebody has any questions.
Well, thank you, Mr. Yarosh, and thank you, Mr. Cornea.